folks. Welcome back to another episode of Fresh Juice, an indie game podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tommy Fresh, and joined as always, it is
Matty Juicy. What is up, everybody?
Whoa.
Whoa. Episode 59, Tom. Almost at 60, you know. Solid 60. That sounds pretty good, you know. 60 eps.
60 eps, you know.
Right around the corner.
60 eps right around the corner. They keep asking us when you're going to stop. And and we're just not going to do it because this podcast is doing so well. We are getting brand deals. Nike just reached out. We're going to say no.
Yep.
We want to keep our integrity. And
yeah, waiting for something a little better, too, you know.
What's that, that watch company? Tag Heuer? Tag Heuer?
Yeah.
I think we're waiting for them, I think.
That company we don't know how to pronounce.
Yeah.
That one. That's the one that we want.
Well, I know Capolo's listening, and I believe it's a Swiss company, so please correct us in the Discord, which we'll get to in a bit. Big news about the Discord. But we do have to catch up first. What's going on with you? How you doing?
Doing good, you know. Just been hanging with the pup quite a bit. Obviously. And then, let's see, yesterday went to a wedding in Brooklyn, which was, it was a great wedding. It was awesome. But it's just so annoying, like getting to Brooklyn, you know, as someone that lives in the Jers. But no, this wedding was like, it's like fully, you know, Italianized, you know, it was like your ideal Italian wedding, amazing rice balls, like freshly fried. Like I had two of them, probably shouldn't have, because they haunted me later. But this wedding also had the best like service I've ever had at a wedding, which is like weird to say, because like a lot of the, you know, it's like usually wedding like staff is like pretty good anyway. But it was like to the point where the person that came over to like get your dinner order at your table, he, like, before he got your dinner order, he was like, oh, hi, like, I don't even remember his name, but he's like, hi, I'm so-and-so. He, like, talked to you, every single person, for, like, a bit before he even got your order. And then he's like, oh, if you need anything, like, let me know. And, you know, the bartenders and stuff were great. They came over to your table to, like, see what you wanted to drink. They remembered all your drinks. They had, like, the doorman was dressed like a magician. It was just, like, you know, it was like very good service overall. And I was just like, wow, they really like waited on you, which was cool. And apparently this wedding also had some ties to the mafia there.
Ooh.
Apparently. So I don't know who they were. I didn't know most of the people at the wedding, but maybe that's why the service was so good. You know, they didn't want to upset anybody, but food was fantastic. And It was a good time. I was actually a little nervous because it was during the Eagles game. So I had it up on my phone and I was just waiting for some Italian guy to come over and just like turn the phone off. Disrespectful, you know, like something like that. But like, okay, all right, no problem. But that didn't happen. So, so that was it. I had a nice New York bagel this morning.
Ooh.
They got I wanted a whole wheat everything bagel with scallion cream cheese. They just gave me a whole wheat bagel, but it was still good. Now I'm home. Went to the reservoir with the pup, walked him around a bit, you know, socializing him, and now we're just chilling, you know, just relaxing. But what about you, Tommy? How's everything going?
Well, how was your weekend? You said you had a New York bagel. Are you someone that thinks that New York bagels are better than Jersey bagels?
It depends on where you get it. This one was like pretty similar to like a New Jersey bagel. I've had New York bagels like that are like super, you know, they're just like super fluffy and they come like right out of the oven. Like I rarely get that in Jersey. Like usually when I go, like I'm not going super early in the morning when they're, I guess, coming right out of the oven. So for whatever reason, I guess probably because New York, they get more foot traffic. They're always kind of making those bagels. So they're always kind of hot. Yeah. So, but I will say this like scallion cream cheese was like top tier. Like,
interesting,
better than the New Jersey one I've had like locally. But that one's still good. But I would say generally there's not a big difference between the two. But I was looking for a nice big like hot bagel. I didn't really get that. But cream cheese was great. So yeah, but well, yeah. What about you?
I'm a hometown boy.
Yeah,
you know,
listen, they did respect the schmear, though. They respected
the schmear. All right,
they did quite a bit. Yeah.
You know, I had been kind of like trying all the bagels in the county I live in, and I have a pretty good map of where the good bagels are in my county now. So I know where the good ones are. And the best one is actually a chain. Not a chain. They have other locations. They're randomly on the west side of the state where I live. But they have a ton in northeast Jersey where is like the where you get the best bagels, I think. You know, the T-neck, Bergen County area. And it's quite good. But, you know, hey, listen.
Yeah.
New York, New Jersey, potato, potato. We just have better bagels and pizza and, well, just everything.
And so, people. Yeah.
And people.
Yeah.
and people. I had a interesting week. Dad went to the hospital. So just visiting him. He's home now. You know, he's just old, you know. We just got to take him out to the pasture, I think. And.
I'm glad he's back home. I did hear about that. I forgot the text. Did he come home yesterday?
Yeah, he came home yesterday. So, okay, you know, that was just, and you know, doing some stuff with that. That was fine. And then yesterday, just played some Flesh and Blood. And I'm trying to think. I felt like there was other things going on. I mean, we're getting closer to the wedding, so it's like,
yeah,
doing stuff like that, and. Kind of just getting ready, doing some raking and stuff like that. Nothing crazy. Just getting ready to spend a lot of money this week. And, you know how it is. Got to spend some money, brother. So, yeah. But I did play something last night at the local game store that I'm going to recommend this week. At the end of the show, so stick around. That was pretty neat. A board game, an indie board game. So we'll have to find out what that is. But we do have some news. Is it good news? Yes, it is. We have a Discord, the Fresh Juice Discord, the Juice Heads. That's where they all hang out. It's in the show notes below. Check it out. It's a great place to be. And I'm excited to see how it grows in 2025. 2024 is not over.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we got some lofty goals for 2025, you know?
We sure do.
The Discord.
Well, it's going to be the biggest year yet for the podcast.
Yep.
I would say. So keep that in mind. Check out that link. Go check it out. Now, in terms of indie game news, I know you threw something here, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on something.
Yeah.
So IGN, a big video game publication, right? Has been for a very, very long time, and they review a lot of stuff. And I think lately, at least in the past year, I've noticed it happen a couple times where they'll come out with a review for a major release, not even like an indie game release, and kind of get it wrong, or at least are like way off the mark of what everybody else is saying. And I think some people think that perhaps these reviewers aren't reviewing, aren't like actually playing the game. Or some people are saying that they're getting the wrong people to review the game, right? I forget. It was like a Souls-like, maybe it was Black Myth Wukong.
Oh, yeah, Black Myth Wukong. Yeah.
And it was, and they had somebody review it that doesn't really play a lot of those kinds of games. And they gave it a pretty disappointing score compared to everything else. And this week they released their score for Mario and Luigi Brothership, the new RPG Mario and Luigi game that's coming out on Switch. It might be out already. And they gave it a 5. And everybody else seems to be really loving this game. And the thing that sticks out in the review is they start out by saying it has a great battle system and like all this great stuff. But, well, what else is in? I mean, like, sure, there's other things like dialogue and stuff like that and story that we talk about. But like,
Yeah.
If it has a great battle system, it's an RPG. Should that not carry it at least close to a 6 or 7 on your scale? Yeah. So what are your thoughts here? Do you think that maybe IGN is kind of not the go-to anymore for this stuff, because they seem to be just like one big media company and that's just it anymore?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's actually been something that I've listened to, like, Kind of Funny, right? Like their podcast quite a bit. And they have some ex IGN people there, and they bring this up kind of all the time whenever viewers or listeners bring it up. And you know, they mentioned that, yeah, sometimes I guess there are reviews that are done by people that aren't really familiar with the genre, or that are just very new to the genre and don't really maybe have a lot of like history with it. And so they don't really understand like certain tropes or certain, game mechanics that like are really successful in that specific genre. So I think it's more of that issue, mm-hmm. of like getting the wrong people maybe. I wouldn't say it's totally wrong, right? I think I've talked to my buddy Bags about this, like back when like we were listening to Kind of Funny, shout out Bags, by the way. Bags. Always thought it would be great if IGN, something as big as IGN, you know, they've got the resources to basically have like parallel reviews. I would love to see a review score from someone that has a lot of history with like Souls likes, and then someone that maybe is brand new or newer to the genre, and just kind of see what they think. Because I think, like, I always think of Elden Ring, right? Where like Elden Ring is a game that the Souls fans really liked, but then it went into the mainstream because people that never really played Souls likes really enjoyed it. But if you look at like Elden Ring reviews, it's all great scores, but like you don't know if you're reading a review from someone that has a lot of history with Souls likes or not. So I always thought it'd be interesting if they did like a parallel review where there were two scores maybe at the bottom or something like that, where, you know, it just kind of gave a little bit more perspective because everyone is into different stuff. So writing reviews on those sort of things, like I would never write a review about like I know we've reviewed like genres that I don't play a lot, right? Deck builder roguelikes or something like that. I would never write like a full review about it because I just don't have a ton of experience with those sort of games. Like I would not feel comfortable doing it. So I think that's the real issue with IGN. I don't know if, I still think that they're a kind of a pinnacle that people look at for when reviews come out for games. They've just already established themselves as like a place that people just typically look at. And there's plenty of people that look at the reviews that don't make comments, right? That don't say, oh, this is like terrible or whatever. That just like, they're like, oh, IGN gave this like a low score. It is what it is. Like, I agree with that, I guess, because I'm usually, you know, there's some people that are in sync with what IGN usually does. But I kind of find it funny that like, there are also people that when IGN gives a great score, they're like, yeah, this is a great game. You know, like I rarely see people saying this game is terrible and you gave it a great score. It's always the other way around where you gave us a terrible score, but this game is great. And they even do it for movies, too, where I remember like, I know you've read the book and you say the book's better, but like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, they gave it like a 3 or a 4 out of 10. And when I saw that movie, I was like, this is like an 8 or a 9 out of 10 to me, because I was like, this was awesome. And I know you say the book is better, but that's something that always sticks in my mind with IGN of just like, you can't really take any reviews like personally or like mm-hmm. that's the end all be all. I always try to like do aggregate sort of stuff. So I hope other people do that as well. If IGN gave it a low review and GameSpot gave it a higher review, and then I'm looking, you know, I'm trying to see like, what is the general consensus here for this game? And if you're saying for this new like Mario and Luigi game that most people are saying it's good, I would bet, you know, I like Nintendo games. I would bet I'd probably end up liking it. You know, I might give it a 7 or an 8. And then also I think a big part of it too is that like I look at streams pretty often to really get like, I want to see like an actual player playing this game. And I think that that is also a part of IGN reviews that isn't really and maybe just reviews in general from these larger publications, is that sometimes they get people in the video format that don't really know how to play. I've seen plenty of games where I'm like watching an IGN review and I'm like, this person is not good at this game at all. Like, why are they reviewing it? So I think it's more about getting the wrong people than like IGN as a whole really not being as trustworthy. But I would like to see, you know, maybe parallel reviews or like more background on who is reviewing it. But I think it's really at the end of the day up to, you know, the consumer. They shouldn't just be looking at IGN, right? They shouldn't just be looking at a single source. They should be looking at multiple sources, you know, talking to their friends about it, talking to other people, finding other people that have similar interests. You know, part of the reason like I like Kind of Funny is because I agree with a few of them on like their interests. I'm like, oh, if he likes this game, I'm probably going to like this game.
Yeah.
Hopefully our listeners maybe think that too. We're like, oh, if Tommy likes this game, I'm probably going to like it. If Maddie likes this game, I'm probably going to like it. You know, whatever it is. And if both of us like it, then Bags will buy Balatro. And that's what happened. There you go. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about this whole IGN stuff. But I haven't actually seen any of this. I haven't even heard about it. So is this like something that's like people are like freaking out about?
People seem to be pretty pissed. So just for context, I always think that Metacritic is the best aggregate for games and movies. Actually, you know, I have my issues with Rotten Tomatoes, but it's sitting at a 79 out of 100 for the critics, which is great. Actually, like that's like the higher, like it's generally favorable, and then the user score is 8.4 out of 10, so like also generally favorable. And it's just very, you're not seeing, like, I'm looking at the critic reviews. You're not seeing a lot of bad reviews about this game anywhere. Even IGN Brazil gave it an 8.5. Like, so, like, they're having, it's just, and, like, whatever. I totally think that this person that reviewed it could have just not liked it, right? I understand. Right. But currently, as it stands, IGN and Digital Trends have given it the two lowest scores.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting also you bring up Metacritic, too, because like I think Metacritic is good overall. But my problem is they don't verify in the gaming world that you actually own the game. There's like, I don't know why they don't allow you to like sign in through Steam or Xbox or PlayStation to verify you own the game before you leave a review. So I typically, like, when it's a game that's also on Steam, I'll look at Steam reviews.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those ones, you know, you have to own the game. So that's my only, like, you know, thing with Metacritic is, like, when you see, like, review bombing, it's mostly people that don't even own the game. But if it's a positive score like that, like 8.4, you said, or 84, whatever it was. Yeah,
for whatever reason, it's out of 100 for critics and then out of 10 for users, so 8.4 and a 79, so like pretty favorable, right? And it looks like there are no unfavorable reviews in the critics section, because it gives you a breakdown, right? It looks like mostly like the I guess the other 29 points or whatever, or 21 points in that score is mixed. That's why it's getting docked. And then it's pretty much the same there. I guess there are some unfavorable reviews in the user score, but you're going to get that a little bit more. People are a little bit more harsh. But I like it to look at like critic reviews. But yeah, you're right. You could just hop on and I'd be like, this is the worst game I've ever seen. I never want to see two Italian plumbers that are brothers in a game again, ever. 0 points. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And, all right, also context for Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. The book is almost always better in a lot of these things. The difference is with that movie is they took the book and said, well, we're not making that movie. We're going to just create a new one, which is fine. Yeah. And, like, I remember, like, losing my mind because, like, the book was, like, this, like, totally different thing, right? And it was cool. It was still cool. They're both cool. Totally different thing. And I'm like, wow, man, it must feel awful to be an author, to write something, and then someone just, like, totally tear it apart and, like, make something new when they get the movie. Yeah. You know, look at the screenwriter for Abraham Lincoln, Vamp Runner. It's the author of the book.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of, like, studio interference, but, like...
Yeah, yeah.
You did it. You,
yeah.
The reason you got the movie deal was for the original thing. So, was the dog here?
No, Maria just handed me a note. Said, you like pepper steak from a Chinese place near us. Hold on. Let me mute for a second. Hold
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, I think that Mario and Luigi is whatever. I haven't played it yet. I plan on playing it because I do actually like that series. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what the whole hubbub is here. And the clips I've seen of the game. If you ever remember Super Mario Z, the video series, where it was like
Mario Z.
It was like a pixel Super Mario world that was like Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, yeah. Look at this.
There are literally cutscenes, like moves that you do with Mario and Luigi that are Dragon Ball Z in this, which is, just seems so sweet. But this is an indie game podcast. But I just wanted to bring up IGN, and that was a good reason to do it. Now, you also put here that employees at Marvel Rivals developer NetEase have been arrested for allegedly laundering up to $139 million.
Yeah, so this is actually Kaymor in our Discord shared this, and I had seen the news prior just because I do play Once Human, which isn't technically an indie game, and the publisher is NetEase. And so when I saw this, I was like, oh boy, like, you know, I'm partnered with them. Am I going to, you know, anything going to happen with my payments and all that sort of stuff? But yeah, you know, this isn't really directly related to an indie game. It's obviously saying Marvel Rivals here, but pretty wild stuff. NetEase, you know, developers or employees at NetEase have been arrested for, laundering money of up to $139 million, which is just insane. I also played Marvel Rivals and it was fun. And I put a little bit of money into it. So I guess, you know, I am a, what do they call? Accomplice. I'm an accomplice with this. No, but this is just wild stuff. Not really a lot to talk about with it, but, you know, NetEase has their hand in a lot of different pots, and they, you know, they have a big mobile game presence. So I don't know, maybe if you're out there and you're playing something from NetEase, maybe dial back a little bit. Maybe, you know, I don't know. NetEase doesn't have the best reputation. So this isn't like totally surprising to me. Because they are pretty predatory in a lot of their monetary practices, but this is by far the most predatory with money laundering. So yeah, I just wanted to, you know, Kmore brought it up in our Discord, so just kind of wanted to talk to the listeners about it, talk to you about it a little bit.
Yeah, this is, I mean, that's a lot of money, but maybe not even that much in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I think they might be a $1 billion publisher. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess technically that wouldn't make Once Human indie, you know, if we're going to get into that debate. But, yeah, just wild stuff. I rarely see this kind of stuff, you know, happening in the games industry, I feel like. And it's just been a weird year. So, you know, we're potentially capping it off with some money laundering for $139 million. But,
I mean, it's just all the more reason to put your chips with the indie devs, I think, right? You know, you don't have to worry. I mean, it could happen anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to worry about it as much, to be honest. If I was a betting man, which I am, I play the Marowak deck in Pokemon TCG Pocket where you got to flip two coins.
Oh, boy.
And you could get two tails and deal zero damage. Just bringing up another mobile games. I'm so sick of it. I'm like, why do I play this deck? Anyway, sorry.
You love it. You need it.
I like
one more game. That's it. Just
I'm like,
one more.
160 damage if I get two heads. Could you imagine? I was laying there in bed. This is a total derail of what we were talking about. I was laying there in bed last night playing, and Lady Fresh is like right next to me, and I'm just like, ah! Like, just like, I get, how could I get such bad luck? But yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So just if I was a bet man, I think that indie games are better. Well, at least in terms of not witnessing money laundering of $130 million. And if you do, listen, if an indie game does that, all right, we're pro indie game.
Yeah.
Through and through.
Yep.
Just keep that in mind, and we will share our bank account information with you. So maybe we'll clean some of the money. That's what the laundering is.
Anyway, that's why we're here. Yeah, making it fresh.
And juicy. anyway, listen, we got a game to talk about. We played a demo this week. We played a demo for a game called Sworn. Now, it is developed by Windwalk Games. They have one previous game called Enemy on Board, but is published by Team 17, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard of. Published Blasphemous, Dredge, Overcooked, and more. And the release date for this is some point in 2025, which we're coming up close to. We don't know what the price is going to be, obviously, because it's just a demo. And they plan releasing it on all platforms. Now, interesting thing about this game is it is, well, first of all, we played the demo. The demo closed today as of us recording. We did not know the demo was going to close, but this is more of like a wish list check. Should you put this on your wish list, right?
Yeah.
It's a great feature on Steam, and I think that, you know, this will be an interesting kind of discussion about this game if you want to put it on your wish list. Now, there seems to be a lot of support here. I'm in the Discord. The Discord said, demo's closed today. Keep your eyes peeled. They've been taking suggestions and stuff like that. We're going to have another demo in the future. So this is kind of like their own little beta testing with these demos. And they also have like a website where you can attach your Steam account to it and start earning rewards for in-game cosmetics and stuff like that and weapons.
Yeah.
So what is this game? It is a 1-4 player co-op action roguelike. Explore and reclaim a fallen Camelot from the reign of the corrupted corrupted Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table. So this is very much a Hades-like. You know, you go from room to room, and it is a very, very similar vibe there in the fact that you're going room to room, you deal with the enemies there, and then you get a reward. Sometimes you get a reward, two rewards you can choose from, and then they'll give you three options, and then you have certain kinds of, I guess, archetypes for the rewards.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is the demigod of ice or something like that. I forget what they call him, not demigod. They call this
The Fae Lord or something. Yeah, or something like that.
It's all, you know, Knights of the Round Table themed, stuff like that, except in this world where they're evil. They're the bad guys. Although, back at your home base, you have folks like Merlin, I forget the name of...
Couldn't tell you.
Arthur's wife in the story. Well, she's there. and, you know, and they're the people you talk
Guinevere.
To. Guinevere. Guinevere, yeah.
Yeah, there it is. I looked it up.
Thank you. So, that, you know, you go back, you know, in between your runs, upgrade stuff, and get new weapons, new characters. Now, there are four playable characters currently. There's like a fast sword type character that you're probably seeing on screen right now if you're watching. There is a like a heavy kind of tank character.
Yep.
There is a wizard character, kind of magic based, and then there's like a paladin wizard, like magic and physical attack combination called the monk. And the cool thing about this is the co-op, actually, right? So you go in, you have your quick attack, your heavy attack, and we played together a couple days ago. And to be honest, I had a lot of fun playing, right? And the thing that stood out to me in this game is kind of the simplicity, right? I love Hades. Hades is a great game, and it's not like overly complex or anything like that, but it is very deep. And this feels a lot more arcadey, which I also really like. I'm all for kind of reverting back to like arcade style experiences, and this really delivers on that. So you go in, you have your heavy attack, your light attack, and your like spell. And those are the only things that you're going to really upgrade. Oh, you also have a dash as well. So you're dashing around, your heavy attack, light attack, spell. You can upgrade all of these based on, you know, more damage or give them extra effects like ice, which slows down enemies, poison, which will slowly deal damage to enemies, stagger, which will, if you deal enough stagger to an opponent, it'll stun them, stuff like that. So pretty straightforward if you know the Hades kind of archetype, that you're just kind of going through this game room to room. You get some enemies, you have elites that are like will give you better rewards. The different kind of rewards you can get are different kinds of currency you can spend back at the base, whether it's doing cosmetics, upgrading weapons, unlocking new characters, new weapons, new spells, or just making your runs easier throughout the progression of the game, I guess, with a meta progression. So I had a lot of fun with this game. It felt, like Hades meets Gauntlet, which I really liked. And it felt like I, as much as I know a lot of people love in Hades, the kind of relationship building, I don't need that in a game like this. I honestly kind of liked that. I was like, all right, I'm just doing cool stuff and I'm going through. And it was like, oh, we fought Gawain. It's the first major boss. So you're going to fight each of the Knights of the Round Table. I'm sure the second to last boss will be Lancelot, if I had to guess. And then followed by Arthur. We did not get that far. I don't know how far the demo goes. And we will never know until it comes back. But it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I enjoyed kind of figuring out the different things. For a demo, it felt pretty deep, so it made me pretty like excited for the eventual release of this game and like future demos and hopefully early access or even a beta, something like that. So I was a big fan. It's going to be a little weird for some people that like it's not going to be that many playable characters, since it looks like it's going to be tied to four, just for to keep in the 1-4 player co-op mode. But it'll be interesting. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this game, or this demo, I should say. You know, I thought the demo had plenty of stuff to do. There are some things that are locked in the demo, certain weapons and upgrades, and even cosmetic items. But I think I'm right there with you with kind of not having the relationship building like in Hades. I don't mind it in Hades. I think some of the dialogue is funny and like interesting. But in this, it's just fun to just go in. I'm just going to beat up some stuff and see how far I can get. And that's about it. Don't really need to have any kind of story elements, I guess you could say, as you're playing and kind of dialogue in that way. I really enjoy the game. I think each character as well is unique in the way that you can like, you know, approach enemies, whether you're ranged or you're close combat or how you can actually help your other players. I know while we were playing, we had died, I believe, to like a boss. And then we're like the next run, you were like, okay, let's like think about this. Like, what upgrades do you have? What upgrades do I have? And then we ended up beating the boss because of that, you know, because we kind of game planned a little bit. So I just really enjoyed that co-op experience as well. I'm very interested to see what it would be like with four players. Do the enemy counts increase? I would imagine the rooms stay the same. Also, there does seem to be some randomization with the bosses that you do face, at least the mini bosses, I should say, not the actual, you know, it's always, it seems like it's always Gawain as the first Knight of the Round Table, but that there's a mini boss you get to at some point that we kept getting like a scorpion kind of character. And then one time I played and it was like this tree that had a completely different move set. So that's cool. I hope they do more of that sort of stuff because, you know, with it being a roguelike, I want kind of a different feel every time I go through. And when we kind of kept getting the same like kind of scorpion boss, I was like, like it would be cool if they threw something else in there. And then they did, and hopefully they add more to that. But yeah, I really enjoy the simplicity with the game. But also on the flip side of that, there's so many things to upgrade in this. You know, you're upgrading. You can unlock a character, then you can unlock different weapons for that character, and then those weapons can be upgraded individually as well at a different vendor that's kind of in the lobby area. Then you have like your skill trees, and there's multiple skill trees. You unlock them by using moonstones that you you get when you beat like a mini boss in the game. They drop a moonstone, so you can collect those. You know, there's a life skill tree you start out with. There's like a war one. I forget what the other ones are, but there's a few different skill trees you can unlock. And what I really enjoyed about the skill trees, and it's something that you figured out while we were playing, is that there are certain nodes on the skill tree that are like these, you know, larger kind of nodes of like, oh, this is like a big, this is going to be a bigger upgrade. And you can actually choose to flip it. And on the flip side of that node will be a different type of effect. So you can really, it kind of allows you to customize your skill tree even more. So, you know, if I'm a monk player and, you know, I'm focusing on a certain part, the skill trees are the same for all the characters, but if I'm focusing on a certain part of the skill tree, if you're a monk player, you might be focusing on that same part, but have those different, you know, kind of skill tree nodes flipped so that, you know, you're focusing on something different, even though we've unlocked the similar nodes. So if that makes any sense, but it was just a really cool like discovery of being like, oh, you can flip these. Like, let's see what do I prefer? Do I prefer to do, you know, 30% more damage when they have 90% health or more, or do I prefer to do 30% more damage when they have 25% or less? Like, do I want to do more damage in the beginning or towards the end of their life? You know, when it comes to like defeating enemies. So that part was really cool. Yeah, you can unlock cosmetics, all that sort of stuff. You got your typical kind of like, which door do I go through sort of thing that, you know, we would, you know, talk about, you know, we don't have a lot of health right now. We should probably not go to the room where there's like a major foe. And then we also figured out that when you go through the doors that have the health, it's not just giving you health, it's increasing your max health, which is like an important thing to kind of know. And I kind of wish they would make that a little bit clearer because I feel like in our first few runs, we didn't really know that. So there's obviously a little bit of cleanup here, and this is a this is that tree boss I was talking about, that mini boss that you have to face. And it's really great too because I felt like, you know, I was actually looking forward to playing the demo more. It's sad that it's not live anymore, but my character, I felt so much stronger because I'm like, all right, I've done some runs, I've upgraded my Spectre character. He's got a scythe, you know, I've got a great like spell ability now. It just feels good. Like after a few runs, you really start to feel like, okay, I can get through this first part of this run, like no problem now. I just need to make sure I don't get hit, you know, and things like that. I really enjoyed like the overall gameplay. It's cool because certain rooms also have, you know, secret shops or like secret challenges that you can do or curses that you can apply to your character. And then, you know, there's a debuff that happens to your character, but then you get a buff in another spot. I think the design of the game is great. I just want more of it, right? It's a demo. I'm hoping like the full launch of this game in 2025, like, you know, I'm fine with the four characters, but I would love to see maybe more variety in like the mini bosses or maybe the items you can get at the secret shops, you know, things like that, or even just the shops in general. I also thought the boss battles were really well done because they're not easy. No. You know, like we barely got through the Knight of the Round Table the first time we got through. And what's great too about that is that when your character dies, you turn into like an orb. As long as you're playing co-op, I guess. If you're playing solo, I think you just straight up die, but you turn into an orb so you can still do like some basic attacks as that orb and help out, which is cool, you know, so you're not kind of just sitting back and watching. But yeah, I would love to kind of pick up this game, play it with some of the juice heads, you know, play with some of the bros. And I think I was just kind of like blown away with like how addicting this game is. So I'm very excited for the launch of it from a gameplay standpoint. Yeah, can't wait. I hope it comes sooner than later in 2025, though, personally. But yeah, so.
I agree. And I honestly, the couch co-op sounds amazing, too, you know, because they plan on bringing it to consoles as well, which is something that's also very exciting, because I think that the co-op is probably the strongest point of this game, even though I had a fun time solo, but playing with you was like a blast. So,
yeah.
Now, story-wise, we don't have much. It's a demo. We kind of went over. It is Knights of the Round Table. They are evil now, and you got to go kill them. Pretty cool. It's not deep or anything like that, but I will say after seeing Gawain, you're like, oh, what's Galahad going to be like? What's Lancelot going to be like? Oh, Arthur's better going to be like freaking sick, right? Like as like the final boss. So I like this kind of vibe. You know, it's a nice kind of like not opposite, mm-hmm. nice like change of pace from the anime style of Hades, right? You know, I like this kind of gritty, and we'll talk about the art, but like this kind of gritty, you know, medieval kind of vibe rather than even like the Greek mythology vibe that you get in Hades. So I'm a fan. It's not much right now. I'll be interested to see if they do much more with it.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, not a lot of story elements. It kind of just has that inherent story because of who the characters are in the game. So would like to see, you know, there's a little bit of like story when you're in the lobby area, right? It would be kind of cool actually too if like maybe there's a narrator voice. I'm thinking kind of like Gauntlet, right? Where like you do certain things and it's like, you know, you have found
a moonstone.
Yeah, a moonstone. Yeah, exactly. Like something like that. Maybe it's Merlin talking. Something like that could be cool. Doesn't really, you know, I guess add a lot of story elements. But again, I'm not really looking for too much of that in this game. Like, so if this release, you know, in 1.0 and didn't really have story elements, I'd be kind of fine with that. Personally, unless there's, it would be cool if like obviously Arthur like had like some sort of sick ass cutscene or something like that to kind of tie up the game. Yeah, not a lot of story elements here in the demo. You are seeing some dialogue there. There you go, in the on the YouTube stream or the YouTube video for the lobby area. That's probably the most story that you get out of the game, is just talking to those characters. But art wise, though, what do you think of the art in the game?
Oh, so sick! It is. Yep. I guess it kind of reminds me of like Dredge, that kind of, or even Sulfur to a certain extent, like the kind of this is not as flat as Sulfur was, but like it has that kind of broad stroke kind of like scary. It reminds me of Knock at the Cabin too, which we didn't review, but I did play. I really like this art style. It's dark, it's gritty, you know, it's certainly not polished yet, but the character design's really, really neat. And they make each weapon feel different and each spell look different. And in within the four characters that you have and the limited amount of things that you can do with them in the demo, they really had their own identities and multiple identities that you could do. Like when you switch like a weapon in this game, you do feel like you're starting to play a different version of this character. It doesn't just feel like, I'm no longer carrying a giant hammer and I'm just carrying something else. No, it feels like I'm doing something differently, which is really neat. Like the character animations and everything like that. So I was a big fan. Like, you know, I think it's like in games like this, the bare minimum is just color code things, right?
Yeah,
and they do that so well, right? The Fae of Ice is always gonna be blue, and then the giant ones like that, like orange, and then like the fire ones red. So you just like know what you're getting into and how it's going to affect your character. It's a very simple thing, and I think could add to a lot of games like this.
Yeah, agreed. You know, they do like kind of that elemental stuff well, where you just kind of understand it without really needing to like read too much of it. I'm like, oh, this is Venom, you know, like this is green, you know, makes sense. Yeah, I agree about the art style. I was kind of getting like a more simplistic version of like No Rest for the Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
A bit too. You know, they kind of have like a almost similar art style. No Rest for the Wicked is a little bit more like on the realism side, I think, a bit from what I remember. But yeah, just, you know, really easy to understand kind of art. Even with the enemy design, I thought each enemy has a really interesting design. You know exactly, you know, as soon as you see it, you're like, all right, I know this attack set of this enemy. There's like a certain frog enemy that always kind of hops away after like its first attack. So that one's really easy to identify. So I think they did a great job art-wise with the game. There aren't really any like kind of like, you know, levels that you go into or certain areas where you're like blown away by like the scale of the art or like the detail of the art, anything like that. It's not really, you know, it's very like kind of close quarters. I would say probably the most like impressive art would be the Gwen battle. Like I thought that was just really cool looking, that whole arena and the way he looks. And also, you know, you do get kind of like different biome areas, right? So after you beat the first Knight of the Round Table, you move into like this swampy rat infested area. So they do a good job kind of making it feel like you did enter a new region. I don't know what the other ones are like kind of after that. I'm not sure if like we start to like get towards a castle maybe or something like that. I'm not too sure. But yeah, really, really enjoyed the art. And I think also one thing about this is maybe more on the gameplay side, but something I didn't realize when we were playing is that like you can actually see it on the screen right now. There's kind of like these, I guess it's water, these like water streams that are in on the map. You have to actually like dash over them. So like for whatever reason, I was just doing it without realizing it. But like if you're going to attack an enemy in a specific area, and maybe that enemy is being blocked by water, even if you have a projectile shot, it doesn't go over the water. You actually have to go over to them and then attack them. So like I was using the Spectre, and I had like my spell is like I turned into like this fireball thing, and I was flying around. I can't actually fly over the water there. So that's more on the gameplay side where I was like, that's just kind of odd, but I understand it from like a gameplay standpoint. It's like a balancing thing where like if one character can do something that another character can't in terms of like breaking the kind of collisions on the map, like that could be an issue. But yeah, art-wise, really enjoyed, you know, everything. I think the enemy design to me was like the coolest thing. It was just like, you know, really well done. They look distinctive. I just want more of it. Like I want more variety with the mini bosses. You know, maybe even like, I don't know, maybe all the Knights of the Round Table have to be in a certain order, but it would be kind of cool if like, maybe occasionally it was like a different first one or something like that, where you're like, oh, I wasn't prepared for this sort of thing. Because it doesn't really tell, it just says you're going to fight a Knight of the Round Table. It doesn't say like, it's always Gwen, like, oh, you're going to fight Gwen here or whatever. But, yeah, so maybe, you know, that would be cool to have a little bit more variety with that, but that's, I guess, more on the gameplay side. I don't know. I'm rambling a bit, but art-wise, I totally agree. The simplistic style of it really just suits the game so well, and all the neon colors that really identify with like the different elements. It just, I never got confused of where I was or what I was trying to do in the game. I was like, okay, you know, this is highlighted purple. Like it's gonna give me what is purple? Purple in the game,
the shadow stuff.
Yeah, the shadow stuff. Yeah. So exactly, yeah, like that makes sense to me. I think that he's actually doing it right there. So yeah, art wise, they did a great job with the game. Excited to see more biomes. Excited to see kind of when the game comes out, what else they can do with it.
Yeah, it seems like each member of the round table is probably locked to a certain biome. And also, I played it solo, and I got to this same mini-boss, like the halfway point boss. And I'm wondering, now we only play with two people, play up to four. I have to imagine each mini boss changes, or the mini boss changes based on how many players, right? Because, you know, it's a difficulty scale, right? Like, I think if we had four players, we would just destroy that one scorpion thing.
True.
Right? So, yeah. I'm interested to see. Now, sound-wise, pretty good. You know, nice little sounding game. Not a whole lot of variety in the soundtrack, but I didn't really expect much, to be honest, going in. Excited to see more. It's the bare minimum they have to do here is just have something that sounds cool while you're playing. And I think they do accomplish that. And there is a lot of cool sound effects going on as well. And I think they just need to be cleaned up a little bit, right? But I don't think it would be fair to expect them to be cleaned up currently until we see at least a more fuller release. But it all sounded fine. Like, I wasn't like, this sounds like shit, but, you know, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. You know, sound effect wise, soundtrack wise, everything like fit into the world. Honestly, it was something where the gameplay kind of captured my attention and I didn't really pay a lot of attention to the sound. It was like, you know, so that means it like fit into the world pretty well and wasn't distracting at all. Even like the way the enemies sound and like, you know, the different weapons you can use and things like that. I think, you know, they all sounded exactly how I expected them to. But yeah, excited to see, obviously, you know, if they can take it up a notch, maybe there'll be some more interesting sound effects and fine tuning when the game actually comes out. But it definitely wasn't anything that took away from the game for me.
Yeah, and performance-wise, I noticed a couple bugs, you know, nothing game-breaking, though. And, you know, hard to judge it right now, much like a lot of the other stuff, but just like a weird thing where you would disappear and move back to the beginning of the level, like at the end of the level, if your other player was kind of like dilly-dallying, yeah. But that might have been just like a fix in there so that you don't get separated too much, but that's the only thing I noticed.
I know also, at least from what I remember, your controller like wasn't working at first, and then it did work.
I have a weird controller, though. That could have been a hardware issue on this side, because sometimes I have issues with other games. I just have issues, brother.
And I know, trust me, I know. but no, I know also, like, after we had beat the Knight at the Round Table, he like drops like an emerald. And, like, you can't actually get into the next room until, like, both of you pick it up. So I picked up mine, and I know it was giving you a little trouble at first, and then you were able to pick it up. So it seems like maybe there's some, like, just weird little bugs that, you know, we thought that one might have been a game-breaking one, but then it ended up working fine. So just weird little kind of things here. But honestly, I think a majority of players will have, like, a good experience with the demo whenever it comes back. Like, they probably won't even notice those sort of bugs. We were really stress testing it, you know. Yeah, we were like, another run. So yeah, but yeah, no issues, no FPS issues or anything like that for me either. Ran really well. Curious to see how it does on the Switch, obviously, right? But I'm sure it'll be fine. It seems like the art style kind of lends itself to being well optimized. So yeah, no really core performance issues for me.
Absolutely. And I think maybe in lieu of a regular rating, maybe we should just say, well, did we convince you to wishlist this?
Yeah.
Right? Because I think it's hard to really say, hey, this is a certified fresh juice demo. And I think it honestly, for a demo, it was for both of us. I mean, you know, you can disagree if you'd like, but I think that this was like a no-brainer wish list after playing this. I was like, I cannot wait for a fuller version of this game, because this is like as close to like roguelike gauntlet that I've always wanted, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's probably, you know, a better version of that out there that could still be made. But like, if I wanted Gauntlet meets Hades, this was it. And I was like, oh, this is sick. I can't wait for more of this game.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the most unfortunate part is that the demo isn't live anymore because I want to play more of it. I want the listeners to hopefully be interested in playing it so that they could try it right away. But I would say, at the very least, you know, if you're on the fence about the game or maybe you're, you know, slightly interested, go to their website and sign up, for, I think it's called the Sworn Hub. And that's where you can connect your Steam account. You can get some free rewards in game. So when you do go play it, when it comes out, you'll get some extra, you know, little goodies, which is pretty cool. So at least I would say at least, you know, do that. It's free, you know, so if you're interested in the game. But I agree. I think the one thing Gauntlet has over this game is obviously like the scale of the maps. Like there's a lot more exploration in Gauntlet than in these games. But who knows? I mean, maybe that's, you know, it seemed like the second biome you get into was bigger than the first one. So maybe it kind of keeps getting larger and larger, and there'll be more to explore. But I hope the listeners, find this one interesting. And I do think it kind of sets itself apart. I've actually seen some people say that this is the next big co-op roguelike. So hopefully, you know, that is the case. Also, I just want to mention, no commentary casual gaming provided the gameplay that we're watching on YouTube. So that'll be linked in the description if you want to check out the channel. But yeah, I would give this a certified fresh juice as well, though, from a demo standpoint. I just had so much fun playing it. I even did some, you know, kind of put it up on the Steam link on the TV. So get that vibe of like couch co-op. And it was so great. Like I hope they have local co-op when it comes out. Do you know if that's confirmed? Because I know it is coming to console, but
I thought it was supposed to be local. And
okay,
let me just bring up the website. But yeah, I thought that was what they were hoping for. Co-op roguelike coming soon. Play solo. I thought I saw something somewhere where it mentioned it might have been on the Steam page, to be honest.
Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, it was. Yeah. Let me bring it up. Sorry, folks.
God, Tom.
Golly. Actually, I don't want to bring up the Steam page because then it's going to play some music. But I think the plan is to be local and online because I did read that somewhere. I don't want to bring it up and make some noise.
Cool. But, yeah, excited to play it when it comes out. 2025.
Yeah. All right. Well, next week we might be doing Split Duty. Next week.
Yeah.
We'll see how
new
it goes.
Game came out, Split Duty.
Split. Yeah, we do have some listener questions. First one coming from Mr. Viz, aka Gary. My question is about the Cars universe, a hotly debated online canon. How are the cars made? Is it like the movie Robots, where a couple orders a box and build the car themselves? Or are they made in a factory and are born young adults since you need to be 16 to drive? What are the ethical ramifications of a car's car factory?
All right. So
this is Pixar's cars.
Yes. Everybody. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. How are the cars made? They're made in a factory. What are you talking about? Like, no. I am not like super well versed in the Cars universe. I've only ever seen Cars 1. So you know, I know a bit about Cars. Are there, I guess a question before I answer this, do you know, are there like baby cars or is it like,
I don't know if they show them in the Cars universe.
Okay. Cause my guess would be they maybe start out as regular cars that just get made in a factory. And then like, it's like they turn into a like actual car. No, I guess I feel like I've seen Lightning McQueen as a baby though, or really? Something like that. Maybe in like a flashback or something like that. This is tough, you know. What are the ethical ramifications of a car's car factory? Well, I think this is the perfect show to answer a question like that. I think we always talk about ethical ramifications of a lot of things. I don't know. What do you think about this, Tom? I have no idea.
So the Cars universe is a little weird. I think that there is a car pope in these movies.
Is there?
Yeah, there's a car pope.
Okay.
So there's a car religion. So if there's a car religion, there's probably a creationist kind of idea, ideology in this universe. So, you know, if you believe them, maybe that these cars, you know, just come out of nowhere or are divinely presented to the world. I think it's a car factory, to be honest. And you go, like, you and, like, a mommy car and a daddy car go to the car factory, and they say, this is what we want. And then the baby car gets made. Although it might come in as a 16-year-old and then grows up. So I think that's totally fine if that's how everybody's doing it. I think otherwise we might be running into some ethical issues, but it's a great question, Mr. Viz. Now, the Cars movies, I think I felt like my age when the Cars movie came out, that was the first bad Pixar movie, or like not great Pixar movie, right? Yeah. So I think I was a little bit older than the target demo for Cars. So, like, I never really got really into, like, the mythos of the Cars world, of the lore. So, yeah, but that's a great question.
Are cars having sex?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. No, I think, like, that's all happening in Ratatouille only. Okay. I don't know. All
right.
More Pixar questions. Send them our way.
Yeah.
Arcarp asked, best breakfast food.
So if we were choosing just like an item that's like, you know, can maybe be composed of multiple items. Like, I love a pork roll, egg and cheese. That's like, you know, on like any type of bagel or like an English muffin, anything that it's on, I'll eat it. That's probably my go-to. But if we're just talking about like a single item, I do love like crispy hash browns. You know, like get them from a diner or even like the pucks or whatever that you can get like at the store. I love those things. Put a little ketchup on there, a little like pepper, a little salt, you know.
Potatoes are good.
Yeah, I love that. So I guess I'll go with those two. I know a lot of people say bacon. I'm not like a huge bacon guy. Bacon's all right.
It's fine.
I like bacon by itself. I don't really like it on things typically, but. What are you thinking about this, Tom? You are, you know, you were talking about bagels before. You clearly had your experiences in the breakfast realm. What are you thinking?
I mean, a bagel with cream cheese, I think, is top tier. A pork roll, egg and cheese is great. But when I think of something I crave in the morning, it is usually a, like, everything bagel or, like, a jalapeno bagel. With some like elevated cream cheese, whether it's scallion, olive, jalapeno cream cheese, something like that. It is top tier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I know the person who asked is a big sweets in the morning, like pancakes, French toast. I'm off the sweets in the morning. It's not for me. But
I will, like, you know, if it's like a Sunday and Maria's like, let's make some waffles. I'll be like, all right, we'll have some waffles. But like, my problem with that sort of stuff is like, I find it way heavier than like if I had a pork roll, egg and cheese. Mm-hmm. I don't find that as heavy, funny enough. So I just don't want to be like, I don't know. I just feel like my whole day shot if I have like a stack of pancakes in the morning. But I will admit they taste good. It's just like so heavy for me. So can't do it.
Amen to that.
Too often. Yeah.
Another food question.
Yeah.
What's your go-to midnight snack? This comes from K-More.
My go-to midnight snack. I haven't been up at midnight lately. Obviously, this doesn't need to be exactly at midnight. But my go-to midnight snack. See, I'm someone I always tell Maria, I'm like, if I don't have any, there's no snacks in the house and you're going to the grocery store or I'm going to the grocery store, I always need to get a salty and a sweet.
Okay.
You know, so like, it really depends. Like if I'm like, all right, I had some Cheez-Its and then I'm going to have like a cookie. I got to say, I'm a big like Oreo guy. I freaking love Oreos. I just love cookies. I'm a big cookie guy. I've been having, I guess, lately, some mini almond biscottis from Trader Joe's. I like that too. You know, yeah. A little crunch there. Yeah. As far as, I don't know, I don't really have a go-to midnight snack, I guess. It like depends what's in the house. We get all different stuff. It feels like weekly. So I don't know. What about you?
The thing that we've been keeping in the house most often that I'll just grab like right before bed is like those Polio cheese sticks.
Oh yeah.
So you get them in bulk at like Costco. And I'm just like in the fridge, and like I have too many of them, whatever. Yeah. But they're good. There's like a nice.
You've always been like a meat and cheese stick guy.
Yeah, yeah. The beef and cheeses, like the the Jack Link's beef and cheeses. I used to really. I mean, I'm not on the beef really anymore, so I don't really go for them anymore. But those used to be amazing. I like an Oreo. I like anything like that. But it's a great question. And then finally. Capolo asks, what game do you expect to play the most during the holidays?
Well, we're pretty close to the holidays, so probably Pokemon TCG Pocket. Apparently, there's a rumor there's like more cards coming in December, so I'll probably be playing that. Obviously, Balotro. Yeah, I don't know. Probably I'm going to just go with Pokemon TCG Pocket, probably. I've just been playing it daily, so I can see myself playing that through the holidays. But what about you, Tom?
Well, I think I got into the beta for As We Descend, and I've been loving the demo, so I'm excited to get into the beta and just play that a lot.
Nice.
The Bazaar, probably. I mean, I played it a couple times, and that will be like open beta in December. I shouldn't have paid for closed beta, to be honest with you, because I've only played a couple times. But it is fun, and it's kind of cool to get in on the ground floor. So the Bazaar will probably be a pretty neat game to play during the holidays, you know, because you can kind of like leave it and come back to it, I guess, and stuff like that. So, yeah. I'm excited. Yeah. And Flesh and Blood, of course. But
yeah, I'll probably be playing the Bazaar too. I totally forgot. What was that, like the first week of December? Cool.
Sweet.
I'm excited.
Now, Rec Room time. What do you have to recommend this week? I just looked at what you recommended.
So I you know, on my Twitter For You page or whatever, this guy's been popping up lately. It is Pokemon TCG Pocket related. His Twitter account, I'll put it, you know, it'll be in the description of the show. It's Clyde underscore Strife. And what he's been doing, which has been great, is making these images of just these quick guides for all these different Pokemon TCG Pocket decks. So like, you know, that's been something where I've looked up decks and stuff and I'm like, oh my God, it's like this article, you know, it's like finding like a recipe article. You're like, they tell you their life story before they get into the deck. It's like, I just need a deck list. That's all I need. Give me a brief description of how the deck works. And like, that's it. So this has been great. I've just like, I haven't even followed him, to be honest. He's just been showing up on my For You page and I just, or, you know, on Twitter. And I've just been like liking it so that I can go back to it later. But he's got these great images of just these, you know, it gives a little intro to the deck. You know, it tells you the core gameplay, right? Of like what to do, like what you should lead with, what you should evolve, you know, what it's strong against, what it's weak against, you know, alternatives for cards if maybe you don't have all the cards unlocked, and then obviously like what the deck list is, if a sample of that. So I believe he's also posting them on Reddit as well, but he's posted maybe like four or five so far, and I haven't actually gone and built any of the decks to see how good they are. But I've just kind of saved them, and it was something I saw today, and I'm like, you know what? This could be a good resource for the listeners, too, because I know we have some Pokemon TCG players in the Discord as well. So, yeah, that's my rec room. Check it out. Clyde underscore Strife on Twitter. Got some cool little infographics, basically, of different decks and how to use them.
Yeah, yeah. I got to say that Starmie EX, I didn't even realize because I was playing against the Lapras kind of event.
Yeah.
It has a zero retreat cost.
Yeah, I know. That thing is broken. 90 attack. It's like 130.
What the heck?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
It only needs two energy. That's like arguably better than the Articuno. Obviously, the Articuno does some crazy stuff. And also, I think Misty, the trainer card, should be banned.
That card. Yeah, it's insane. Anyway. And why does it feel like every time a Misty's used against me, it's like heads, 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 heads. Yeah. I had a guy get like 9 of them in a row. I just conceded immediately. Yeah, I was like, what am I going to do?
See you later.
Yeah. Like, I'm just getting to the next match here. Yeah.
But that's those types of games, those kinds of cards games. They like them quick and easy. Yeah. So my recommendation is a board game by Letter Games, LederGamas. GAMAES, not AS, not GAMAS. Letter Games. You might know them. They did the game Root, Oath, Ahoy, stuff like that for the board gamer fiends out there. Root's probably like an all-timer, right? It's a asymmetrical, really cool game. They also have a great Steam game and mobile version of it as well. Anybody's ever interested in kind of playing that game. But they came out with a new one called Arcs. And this is it right here.
Oh, and shit. Live reveal.
Live reveal, Arcs, Conflict and Collapse in the Reach. So first of all, their art that they do on these games is always incredible. And this game is like a lot of fun. And I got to play it at the LGS yesterday. Shout out Koros War Games. And basically, it's a trick-taking game with a lot of like other stuff going on. Now, if you don't know what trick-taking is, it's like Uno or Crazy Eights. So like everybody's playing cards and trying to match a suit, but it obviously has some more depth than that. So that's like the best way to kind of explain it. It's a trick-taking game with like cool space strategy and stuff like that. Mm. So with amazing art and I think a lot of depth. So it's a cool game. Pick it up if you're into board games. If not, it's not for everybody. But yeah.
Now I got a question in terms of board games, because you are a big board game guy. Is there a particular like theme that really like gets you first interested in a board game like space or medieval or something like that? Because you've had a few space like related games. Is there a particular one that grabs you more than others? Like just. You know, it might not be a good game, but like just to get your interest at first.
It is kind of interesting. I go like I don't go for space stuff in video games, but I go for space stuff in board games. I don't know why. Like Moonrakers, love Moonrakers. I also back the Kickstarter for the sequel to Moonrakers. And then there was also that space game that I got at PAX this past year.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking about going to PAX Unplugged this year. I'm not sure. But yeah, I don't know. There's something about the space games that like feel cooler in board games. I don't know, but I like medieval stuff as well. But sometimes it just, I don't know. There are certain board games I really don't like. Like I know like a lot of people like worker placement stuff, and there's a little bit of that stuff going on here, but that's really boring to me if that's all it is. Like the game Puerto Rico, I hate that game. And
what do you hate?
No, I like the island of Puerto Rico, but there's a board game called Puerto Rico that I find so boring and just not fun at all. I need like a good theme, right? Like space is a fun theme. So
yeah.
But that's going to do for the show, folks.
There it is.
I've been Tommy Fresh. You've been Matty Juice. You can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, everything at Fresh Buds Pod. Have another podcast called Fresh and Buds. Check that out. Matthew, where can people find you?
Find me at Matty Gorm, G-O-R-M, on all the socials and such. And, of course, if you do want to follow the show, Fresh Juice Pod on all of the socials and everything. You know, we're always tweeting out the episodes. Join the Discord if you would like to. Great way to get some listener questions. Shout out Mr. Viz, too, submitted a listener question there. I think it's been a bit since he submitted one, so good to see you in there again, man. And yeah, another good ep in the books. Next week should be pretty interesting. We'll split duty.
And we'll see. We might be seeing each other soon. Maybe a little juicy, boosy, woosy, juicy. Goodbye.